The warehouse district was quiet that morning, except for the hum of unmarked engines idling behind a row of loading bays. At 6:45 a.m., federal agents in black jackets moved in. A coded signal over the radio. Then the door came down. Inside, a man stared at a wall of computer screens, each flashing streams of digital currency moving in real time. Within seconds, the operation that had stolen millions from American victims was over. For months, the FBI's cybercrime division had followed the invisible trail of cryptocurrency wallets linked to a sophisticated pig butchering investment scam. Victims had been lured by messages of trust and love, convinced to transfer their life savings into false trading apps. What began as a romance had ended as ruin. Now, two Chinese nationals stood accused of orchestrating a $73 million fraud that stretched across continents. The question was no longer if they did it, but how they were finally caught. Chapter 1, The Digital Web. At dawn, agents from the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Secret Service converged on a quiet industrial strip outside Los Angeles. Their vehicles rolled in without sirens, the way they always did when they believed the suspects were still inside. A battering ram swung once, and the steel door buckled. Within seconds, agents in tactical gear filed into the narrow office space that doubled as a call center. Rows of desks faced glowing monitors, each showing a matrix of cryptocurrency transactions. Two men stood frozen near the center. The raid capped nearly a year of digital pursuit. To the agents in charge, it was the final piece of a puzzle that had started with a single, almost routine complaint. One woman in Texas who said she'd lost her retirement savings to an online relationship that turned into a crypto investment. The agent who took the call marked it as potential romance fraud. At the time, there was no reason to think it was part of a multimillion-dollar operation. But within weeks, similar complaints began surfacing in California, Florida, and Illinois. Victims described the same sequence: a friendly message from a stranger on a dating app, a gradual exchange of photos and voice notes, then the introduction of an investment opportunity. The language varied slightly, but the pattern was identical. Each victim was directed to a platform that mimicked legitimate trading apps. The profits looked real on the screen. When they tried to withdraw, the system stalled or demanded more funds. By the time they realized it was fake, the accounts were empty. The FBI's cyber unit had seen dozens of scams like this before, but something about this case stood out. The losses were too large, the infrastructure too organized. The servers weren't the usual single-site fraud hubs. They were mirrored across multiple domains, each one hosted through privacy-protected registrars. The emails used for customer support were encrypted and routed through foreign networks. Whoever built it understood both finance and digital concealment. By late 2023, the Bureau's Internet Crime Complaint Center had received more than 200 reports tied to what victims called the Phoenix Investment Group. Losses exceeded $30 million, and analysts believed that was only a fraction of the total. The term pig butchering had become shorthand in law enforcement, a blend of romance manipulation and financial fraud, where victims were fattened with false affection before being slaughtered for their money. The cruelty wasn't physical, but it was complete. Special Agent Laura Kim took over coordination of the task force in November. Her background was in digital forensics, and she had previously worked on ransomware cases where tracking blockchain movements had led to arrests overseas. She set up a small team inside the Los Angeles field office and began compiling every complaint that mentioned the Phoenix name. Each report included wallet addresses, exchange references, or screenshots of app interfaces. Piece by piece, her analysts built a map of transactions. The first major breakthrough came when a blockchain analyst flagged a wallet cluster showing repeated transfers from several victim accounts to one central node. That node then funneled funds into a rotating series of new wallets, often within minutes of each deposit. The pattern suggested an automated laundering script, software built to break down incoming cryptocurrency into smaller pieces, then route it through mixers and exchanges before cashing out. They traced one transaction through seven wallets in three different countries before it landed in an exchange account registered to a Delaware shell company. The business address belonged to a virtual office used by hundreds of offshore entities. Still, it was a starting point. With subpoenas, the Bureau uncovered related accounts tied to shell firms in Singapore and the British Virgin Islands. The paperwork was elaborate but sloppy. Each company registered within weeks of another, all using similar naming conventions. By early 2024, investigators realized they weren't chasing a single domestic ring. This was an international laundering network structured to look legitimate. The perpetrators had embedded themselves in the American financial system, using real business bank accounts and tax IDs to move stolen cryptocurrency into dollars. The first visible link to China came through a misstep. A wire transfer of $480,000 from one shell account landed at a Hong Kong exchange under a name that matched a suspect previously flagged by Interpol for cyber fraud. The email tied to that account contained a single alias, Eric Zhang. The name was generic enough to avoid detection, but the pattern of digital behavior, the login times, the device fingerprints, matched that of a second user who had registered under a different name on another exchange. That second user used Mandarin language settings, and his IP traced back to an apartment in Shenzhen. At the same time, agents in New York were pursuing a parallel case involving similar wallet addresses. They joined forces with Kim's Los Angeles team under a newly formed joint task force focusing on cross-border cryptocurrency fraud. Representatives from the Department of Justice, the Secret Service, and the IRS Criminal Investigation Division joined in. Their coordination was slow at first, different jurisdictions, different systems, but as digital evidence mounted, the connections grew undeniable. To make sense of the pattern, analysts reconstructed the timeline. The Phoenix platform had gone live in March 2022. Its front-facing website showed a convincing interface with live charts and responsive customer service. Victims described polite agents who spoke fluent English and used U.S. phone numbers. The servers, however, were hosted in Singapore and mirrored in Europe. The customer chats were routed through an encrypted messaging app favored by overseas scam networks. In one recovered transcript, a victim in Ohio chatted for months with someone she believed was an investor living in San Francisco. He sent photos, holiday greetings, and even small profits to build trust. When she deposited a final $60,000, the communication stopped. Her withdrawal request was rejected, and she was locked out. Investigators later found that her account data was copied within hours to an IP linked to the Shenzhen address. By February 2024, the FBI had traced more than $70 million in losses to the same core structure. Agents prepared a series of sealed indictments and coordinated with the Department of Justice's Office of International Affairs to pursue arrests overseas. But first, they needed concrete identification. Through cooperation with Singapore's Monetary Authority and the Hong Kong Police Force, investigators received transaction records tying the Delaware shell firms to two primary operators, Li Wei, age 34, and Chun Rong, age 37, both Chinese nationals with prior fraud allegations in Southeast Asia. Li handled the technical side, servers, wallet automation, exchange accounts. Chun managed the communication teams, many of whom were unwitting employees hired through online job ads to assist with customer onboarding. Inside the Los Angeles office used by the pair, investigators later found multiple cell phones, laptops, and a ledger listing wallet credentials. The devices contained detailed instructions for maintaining the illusion of legitimacy, scripts for interacting with victims, lists of potential app templates, and guidance on avoiding financial monitoring systems. The arrests came quietly. On March 19, 2024, the task force executed simultaneous warrants in Los Angeles and New York, apprehending both men without resistance. The following morning, the Department of Justice released a short statement confirming the arrests of two Chinese nationals accused of operating a large-scale investment fraud targeting U.S. citizens. It cited charges of wire fraud, conspiracy to commit money laundering, and aggravated identity theft. Behind that simple announcement was a vast network of evidence: terabytes of digital logs, blockchain analysis reports, and bank statements. The total estimated loss stood at $73 million. As the sun rose over Los Angeles that morning, agents loaded confiscated hardware into evidence trucks. For the first time, many of them allowed themselves a moment of relief. Months of encrypted data and sleepless nights had finally led to a break. But even in that brief victory, the question lingered: how many other networks like this were still out there, hidden behind the anonymity of code and servers scattered across the globe? Agent Kim stood outside the building, watching the media vans arrive at the barricade. She knew the case was far from over. The extradition requests, asset recovery, and trial preparations would stretch for years. Still, this was the moment they had worked for, the point where numbers on a blockchain turn back into faces, names, and justice. Inside one of the seized computers, technicians found a single open window, a chat message written in Chinese, sent minutes before the raid began. Translated, it read, "Move the remaining funds. They're here." It was too late. The web had already closed around them. Chapter 2, The Trail of Coins. The seizure lab inside the Los Angeles field office looked more like a tech startup than a government space. Rows of dark screens reflected the steady glow of code. Each workstation had a single purpose: to turn encrypted chaos into evidence. That morning, as the two suspects were being processed downtown, the analysts began unpacking what they'd collected. Dozens of laptops, hard drives, and thumb drives, all potential gold mines of digital proof. Forensic specialist Maya Ortiz was the first to spot a lead. On one of the smaller drives, she found an unencrypted spreadsheet titled Accounts 2023. Inside were more than 3,000 wallet addresses, each paired with timestamps and internal transaction codes. The columns read like a roadmap of the entire operation. She cross-referenced the addresses through Chainalysis, a blockchain tracing platform used by both the FBI and IRSCI. The visual graph exploded into color. Thousands of nodes branching from a few central wallets, each representing deposits from victims. The funds then flowed outward through mixing services and overseas exchanges. But even with modern obfuscation tools, crypto left footprints. Ortiz zoomed in on one wallet chain that looked different. Instead of fragmenting immediately, it showed large deposits sitting briefly before being transferred in predictable intervals. That pattern suggested human control, someone moving funds manually rather than by automation. A small detail, but crucial. When they traced the login metadata, they found that every movement originated from a single laptop seized during the raid and registered under the alias Eric Zhang. Agent Kim watched from behind the glass. The spreadsheet, the alias, the device, it was the backbone of the case. Now the job was to prove intent and coordination, not just coincidence. By early April 2024, the investigation had expanded into what prosecutors called a joint digital forensics matrix. Agents from the Secret Service's Global Investigative Operations Center joined in, analyzing communication logs from the seized phones. Most messages were in Mandarin, but translation software revealed phrases that lined up with transaction timestamps. Batch cleared. Hold transfers until update. Prepare Singapore route. It was clear that Li Wei and Chun Rong had built a structured workflow. Li oversaw the technical routing, selecting which crypto mixing services to use, when to swap between Bitcoin and Tether, and how to disguise origin trails. Chun managed communications and client onboarding, meaning the dozens of romance chat operators who convinced victims to invest. Agents soon learned that the operators weren't all aware of the crime. Many were young workers in call centers across Southeast Asia, hired through job ads promising remote work and cryptocurrency training. They were paid in digital coins, given scripts, and told to build trust. It was part of a new model of organized fraud, a corporate pyramid of deception stretching across continents. The data chain. As evidence grew, so did the need for clarity. The Department of Justice convened a technical review in Washington, D.C., gathering analysts from multiple agencies. Their mission was to build a visual timeline of every major transaction. They called it the data chain. In a conference room filled with projection screens, they mapped out each stage. Stage 1. Victims deposit cryptocurrency into fake trading platforms hosted on Amazon and Alibaba cloud servers. Stage 2. The system automatically diverts funds to a holding wallet. Stage 3. Funds move through mixers, software designed to blur origins by blending multiple transactions. Stage 4. The mixed coins enter legitimate exchanges under shell company accounts. Stage 5. Those exchanges convert the crypto to dollars, sending wire transfers to U.S. business accounts controlled by the suspects. The total traced across all stages came to $73.4 million. Forensic accountants matched at least $38 million to confirmed victims, and the rest to laundering layers still under analysis. The chain also revealed mistakes. In one instance, a transaction from a victim in Florida was routed through a wallet that had once been used in an unrelated phishing case in Malaysia. That overlap gave prosecutors a jurisdictional bridge. Working through the Office of International Affairs, the FBI secured cooperation from Malaysian authorities, who provided metadata proving the wallet's reactivation came from Li Wei's known devices. "That's your fingerprint," Kim told the team. "He left it on his own network." Inside the exchanges, while forensic analysts handled the blockchain, financial investigators turned to the banks. Most of the fiat withdrawals had passed through small regional banks in the U.S. where the shell companies held legitimate accounts. On paper, each entity claimed to be an import-export consultancy or fintech marketing firm. Their tax filings were minimal but compliant enough to pass casual scrutiny. Special Agent Ben Torres, from the IRSCI division, coordinated with compliance officers at three banks to reconstruct the flow of money. They discovered that each shell company used a payroll processor to mask outbound wires as vendor payments. The vendors, in turn, were offshore entities controlled by Chun. When the compliance teams reviewed the data, they found red flags everywhere. Recurring transfers just below reporting thresholds, identical memos, and immediate withdrawals in Hong Kong. The banks had flagged the accounts for review months earlier, but lacked enough evidence to freeze them. Now, with the federal warrants in hand, the transactions told a coherent story, fraudulent proceeds disguised as corporate expenses. Through subpoenaed email records, agents uncovered correspondence between Chun and a U.S.-based accountant who had unknowingly helped prepare annual filings. The accountant, when interviewed, said the business seemed normal. "They had real invoices," he explained. "Everything balanced. But the invoices were fabrications, identical templates with names swapped out. Each PDF carried metadata, showing it had been created using the same version of a pirated office suite registered to a laptop seized in Los Angeles." For prosecutors, that digital connection was the missing proof of deliberate deception. Victims and patterns. While agents combed through data, victim interviews continued nationwide. The stories were heartbreakingly consistent. A widowed teacher in Arizona. A retired contractor in Illinois. A young nurse in North Carolina who had saved for her first home. All believed they were investing in legitimate crypto platforms recommended by someone they trusted online. They described an almost identical pattern. Long conversations, talk of marriage or travel, screenshots of supposed trading profits, and gradual pressure to reinvest for higher gains. Some even received small payouts early on, proof that the system worked, until the withdrawals stopped entirely. Forensic linguists reviewing chat transcripts noticed that many of the scammers' English messages contained subtle linguistic similarities. Repeated phrasing, similar grammar errors. That consistency tied multiple personas to the same scriptwriters, likely working under Chen's direction. At the psychological level, investigators saw a playbook of manipulation. Emotional bonding, reinforcement, urgency, and eventual silence. The victims' testimonies became not only evidence of fraud, but a record of how digital deception could mimic intimacy. The international coordination. By May 2024, the case had evolved into a model of international cooperation. Through a formal request under the Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty, U.S. prosecutors secured access to transaction records from Hong Kong and Singapore. Both jurisdictions confirmed that Li and Chun had personally opened or controlled several exchange accounts. Interpol issued red notices for three additional associates still abroad. Meanwhile, forensic analysts in Washington continued decrypting chat backups from seized phones. One message exchange, recovered from a secure folder, showed Chun giving direct orders to staff. Maintain contact with new victims daily. Remind them of next trading window. Never mention withdrawals. That message was timestamped just 3 days before his arrest. During a briefing at the Justice Department, Agent Kim presented a clean narrative for prosecutors. Over 200 U.S. victims. More than 3,000 crypto transactions. Funds laundered through at least 19 shell companies. A total traceable value of $73.4 million. The evidence was irrefutable. Building the case. Assistant U.S. Attorney Nathan Reed led the charging process. He specialized in financial crimes involving digital assets and had seen the shift from small romance scams to corporate-scale fraud. In court filings, Reed emphasized the sophistication of the operation, how it blurred the line between emotional and financial exploitation. "The defendants weaponized trust," he wrote. "They built an empire of deception on affection and greed." Prosecutors attached hundreds of exhibits, chat transcripts, exchange logs, forensic blockchain diagrams, and bank transfer chains. Each was labeled, timestamped, and cross-referenced against the seized drives. Li and Chun were charged with conspiracy to commit wire fraud, conspiracy to commit money laundering, and identity theft. Both pleaded not guilty at arraignment, speaking through interpreters. They were held without bail pending extradition motions from related jurisdictions. In the weeks that followed, public reaction was swift. Financial watchdogs praised the arrests as proof that crypto crime was no longer untouchable. Media coverage highlighted the joint work of federal agencies, once siloed, now collaborating through shared forensic platforms. The FBI's cyber division used the case as a training model for identifying cross-border laundering structures. Still, inside the bureau, analysts remained cautious. The blockchain maps showed dozens of related wallets still active. Tracing and freezing them would take months. The digital fingerprint. One final clue came unexpectedly. A data recovery team working through damaged files found a folder labeled promo videos. Inside were marketing clips for the Phoenix Investment Group, slick animations showing graphs, logos, and testimonials. But embedded within the metadata of each file was a creator tag, Elway_design. The same alias appeared on a freelance platform account used to hire video editors. Payment for the projects came from one of the shell companies under investigation. It was a small detail, but for prosecutors, it connected identity, activity, and benefit. The triad needed to prove criminal intent. With that, the case file reached completion. Over 12 terabytes of digital evidence had been indexed. More than a dozen agencies across four countries had contributed. The DOJ prepared to announce the indictment publicly. Before the press release went out, Kim stood in the evidence room one last time. She watched as technicians packed sealed drives into climate-controlled crates for long-term storage. Each label bore the same prefix, Case 24, CF, 2087, Phoenix Scam. She thought of the victims who would never see all their money returned, and the thousands of people still messaging strangers online, unaware of how easily their affection could be weaponized. The work wasn't finished. But for once, the trail of coins had led somewhere solid. Proof that even in a world built on code and anonymity, someone was always watching. Chapter 3, The Break and the Aftermath. When dawn broke over Washington, D.C., the Department of Justice released its official statement. Two Chinese nationals arrested in $73 million cryptocurrency investment fraud scheme. The headline traveled fast. Within hours, the story appeared on national networks, framed as one of the largest pig butchering scams ever dismantled by U.S. authorities. To the public, it was another headline about digital crime. Inside the Bureau, it was the culmination of a year's worth of sleepless nights and painstaking forensic work. The arrests. Li Wei and Chun Rong had been held in federal custody since the March raid, pending indictment. Their cooperation was limited, each claiming ignorance of the larger network. The evidence, however, was overwhelming. On March 28, 2024, both men appeared before a magistrate judge in Los Angeles. Dressed in plain detention jumpsuits, they listened as prosecutors outlined the case. Wire fraud, money laundering, conspiracy, and aggravated identity theft. Each charge carried decades of potential prison time. Through interpreters, they entered pleas of not guilty. Outside the courthouse, federal spokespersons faced cameras. "This case demonstrates that digital currency does not equal digital immunity," said Assistant Attorney General Lisa Monaco. "These arrests send a clear message. Online anonymity is not a shield against justice." Behind her, Agent Kim stood among the task force members, quietly absorbing the moment. They had followed every trace, every transaction, until the pieces formed a full picture. But she knew the true test would come in court, where defense attorneys would question every byte of data, every warrant, every translation. The forensic showdown. In April, prosecutors began presenting evidence to the grand jury. The digital forensics alone filled hundreds of pages, each wallet address, IP log, and data chain painstakingly annotated. Expert witnesses explained how blockchain analysis worked, using diagrams that looked like constellations of light. One slide showed a single coin transaction branching into 20 new wallets, then recombining months later in a single account under Li Wei's control. "It's like following dye through the bloodstream," one analyst testified. "No matter how far it moves, the color eventually reappears." The prosecution also presented human evidence. Victims' testimonies, bank statements, and chat logs. A retired accountant from Ohio told jurors how he lost $280,000 to a woman he met on a dating app who urged him to invest in Phoenix trading. "She called me her future," he said quietly. "I thought we were saving for our life together." Another victim, a single mother in Florida, described liquidating her 401k. When the account showed I made profit, I thought I'd finally caught a break, she said. Then the screen went blank. They told me the system was under maintenance. That was the last time I heard from him. Each story was devastating, but collectively, they revealed a pattern too deliberate to be coincidence. Defense counsel tried to argue that the evidence was circumstantial, that Li Yinchen merely worked for the companies in question without knowledge of the fraud. But forensic analysts dismantled that claim piece by piece. The seized chat logs, transaction timing, and code signatures tied both men directly to the architecture of the scheme. Cross-border cooperation. While the trial preparation continued, international coordination intensified. Through the Department of Justice's Office of International Affairs, officials in Singapore, Hong Kong, and Malaysia froze multiple exchange accounts and seized hardware wallets containing cryptocurrency valued at approximately $15 million. The Hong Kong police force confirmed that Li Yinchen had withdrawn substantial sums between 2022 and 2023, often converting Bitcoin into stablecoins before transferring the funds into corporate accounts. Singaporean regulators traced additional funds used to purchase luxury real estate. Those properties were quickly frozen under asset forfeiture provisions. In a joint press conference, the FBI and the Monetary Authority of Singapore announced a new framework for cross-border crypto investigations, citing this case as the prototype. This isn't just about two individuals, said Deputy Director Paul Abate. It's about proving that law enforcement can adapt faster than crime. The evidence wall. Back in Los Angeles, the evidence room had become an archive of digital history. Rows of sealed drives, printed blockchain maps, and labeled exhibits filled the shelves. Each had a tag reading Phoenix Case 24, CF 2087. Technicians reconstructed portions of the fraudulent Phoenix investment platform. On screen, it looked professional, moving charts, customer dashboards, even pop-up chat support. The illusion had been flawless. What users couldn't see was the hidden script running in the background, automatically redirecting deposits to offshore wallets. The DOJ cyber team demonstrated the system for prosecutors. One live simulation showed how a $10,000 deposit would vanish in under 60 seconds, split into a dozen wallets, and then resurface days later in a centralized holding account under the suspect's control. Agent Kim watched quietly. It was the perfect visual proof of the scam's sophistication and its simplicity. It was never about technology, she said later. It was about human trust. They just weaponized it through code. The verdict. After weeks of testimony and cross-examination, the grand jury returned indictments on all counts. The trial itself began in August 2024. Proceedings were meticulous, focused less on drama and more on verification. Jurors were guided through the maze of blockchain evidence, aided by expert visuals. On the fifth week, prosecutors presented the final chain, a transaction log linking Li Wei's personal wallet to a U.S. exchange that had processed withdrawals used to purchase a luxury SUV found in his name. The purchase date matched the week of the largest victim deposits. The defense had no rebuttal. On September 18, 2024, both men were found guilty on all charges. Sentencing was set for November. At the final hearing, Judge Elizabeth Crane addressed the courtroom. This case illustrates a modern form of deception that hides behind screens but destroys lives just the same. Justice here serves not only restitution but deterrence. Li Wei received a sentence of 25 years in federal prison. Chen Rong received 22. Both were ordered to forfeit assets totaling over $35 million, including cryptocurrency wallets, vehicles, and real estate holdings. The aftermath. For the victims, justice was bittersweet. While the government began distributing partial restitution from seized assets, many would never recover their full losses. Still, the conviction provided closure, a rare outcome in the shadowy world of crypto fraud. News outlets framed the case as a milestone, the first large-scale pig-butchering prosecution to yield convictions in U.S. federal court. Analysts hailed it as proof that blockchain transparency, once considered a criminal shield, had become a forensic weapon. In interviews, prosecutors emphasized the human side. "We didn't just follow numbers," Reed said. "We followed pain. Every transaction told a story of someone who trusted and lost." The FBI's cyber division used the Phoenix case as a national training model. Agents across the country now studied its methods: data clustering, IP correlation, and international subpoena strategy. It became part of an internal lecture series titled Following the Money in the Age of Code: Reflections and Reform. In the months that followed, Congress held hearings on the rise of romance-based investment scams. Lawmakers debated stronger regulations for crypto exchanges and mandatory customer verification. The Phoenix case was cited repeatedly as evidence that international cooperation could work, but only if private exchanges acted faster to flag suspicious activity. Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, Agent Kim closed her case file. She'd been reassigned to a new task force focused on emerging artificial intelligence fraud. The work never stopped. Before leaving her office, she looked once more at the whiteboard that had tracked every lead, a web of red and blue lines linking names, wallets, and timelines. It was a map of deception and persistence, chaos and order. She thought about the victims she'd spoken with, the teacher, the contractor, the nurse. None of them had ever met the men who stole their savings. Yet their voices had fueled the investigation, their patience giving shape to the pursuit. Justice, in cases like this, rarely felt complete. But it was progress, a reminder that even behind encrypted walls and fake names, accountability could still find its way through.